Adama Kusimang. Next to him, it's the COO of Samsa, Sobhanjit Dilawu. On my right, I have the CFO, Phumlani Myeni, and we have Vusi Sachemba from the COO's office. If you can recall, the last time we appeared before the committee, there was a letter that was handed over to the chair from the chairperson of the board, highlighting the challenges that he was having solely due to the short notice that we were getting from the shareholder on us coming to honor the invitation from the committee. This time I can proudly say we received the notification on time, and I hope going forward we'll do so to ensure that the chairperson avails himself. A lot of the issues that slightly uncomfortable issues, the chairperson will highlight them later on during the presentation, and for now I'll hand over to the chairperson. Thank you, Chair. Thanks.
Simang, the platform is yours. You're heartily welcome once more in 2018. We've been looking forward to engaging you in particular as the chairperson of the board, because siyabona ungathi it's not moving to the right direction, but we know you've got what it takes to be able to bring it into proper light. The podium is yours, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And I thank also the members of the Portfolio Committee, Department of Transport officials, and I think members of our sister company, ATNS, have gone. Recognize SAMHSA officials, ladies and gentlemen. I must start off my remarks on the back foot, unfortunately. I apologize most sincerely for my absence during the past two sessions when we were called upon to present our report to the Portfolio Committee. I ask you to charge those absences to previous commitments that were not very easy to change. On the other occasion, of course, I was receiving medical attention for a neurological problem that probably has to do with aging. We continue to engage with relevant personnel in the Department of Transport to ensure that we are given timely notice in future about appointments with our esteemed portfolio committee. I would like, on behalf of my delegation, to thank the Portfolio Committee for the opportunity to present our annual report. I acknowledge the fact that we are late in the submission of the annual report, mainly for the following reasons. Firstly, we had difficulties with the audit that was carried out following the action taken by the board in seeking to stabilize SAMHSA. Such board activities include commissioning a forensic investigation, which has now been concluded. SAMHSA was invited to explain these issues in November 2017, a discussion that the Portfolio Committee will recall. Nonetheless, the audit has been concluded, and SAMHSA is thus here to present the outcome, which, for the first time in 8 years, I must say regrettably, is a qualified audit. The reasons for the qualification will be dealt with during the presentation. On a positive note, as part of its OR Tambo Centenary program, SAMHSA undertook an initiative that anchored the maritime industry development in the Port of St. John's Municipality, in the OR Tambo District Municipality, in terms of which 97 young people were trained and employed in international cruise line industry, would like to acknowledge the tremendous contribution of the Eastern Cape government for the partnership that provided funding for this program. Also, 50 young people were trained in diving and life-saving. For this, we'd like to thank KZN Shark Board, who are our training partner. There's also been the Wild Coast Hiking Trail Adventure Development, which showcases the beautiful coastline and the economic opportunities for the communities that live there. Lastly, Madam Chair, our appearance here offers us the opportunity of highlighting how the organization is rolling out the Maritime Development Program in areas that are far away from the coast. Our skills development programs inland provinces are producing a number of seafarers that are employed in international shipping. In this regard, people will be surprised to learn that Limpopo province produces the second largest number of seafarers after KwaZulu-Natal. We must regretfully report that we are still faced with a situation where there is no CEO 16 months after we submitted our candidate recommendation for approval or otherwise by Cabinet. Also, as of the end of July last year, our six-person board is short of two members. We expected that their mandate would be either renewed or other members appointed. This hasn't happened. I would like to really thank these two members who had very many meetings, none of which for income, while we're trying to sort out the problems that afflicted the management of SAMHSA. Would be most grateful to have these situations regularized. In respect of the board, we are coming up with some of the most innovative ways of keeping the work going, because these members, who are no longer members of the board since their term expired, can be members of committees. We bring them in, and they do that with a smile, and we get important work done. But we have to have everybody at the board meeting in order for any of the resolutions to be implemented. On the detail of the issues, I'll request the COO and the CFO to take the committee through those things. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Maybe even before they start, as the chairperson of the board, would you, before we start talking, indicate to us why must it take 16 months for the appointment of the CEO? What are the issues? Is there an indication from the executive as to why the delay?
Thank you, Chair. The issue of the CEO is a matter that we're taking ourselves directly with the ministry. We have done what needs to be done, namely do the shortlisting, and recruitment shortlisting, and the presentation of who we would recommend as a candidate to the, maybe I should say, minister through the ministry. We have been waiting for feedback, you know, good or bad, as to what the fate of our application, our submission is. We have a very active deputy minister who is assigned particularly to look after SAMHSA affairs, oversight over SAMHSA. She's unable to tell us what the holdup is, but we haven't been asked to provide additional information, nor have we really been informed what we would need to do to consummate this request. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think on behalf of yourself, the portfolio committee will make a reflection and make a follow-up to the minister as to what are the issues on this matter, because we really get, we've got a discomfort in almost everywhere. It's an acting. We are not in Hollywood, really, where we should always have actors, because even the people who are acting, you do your damned, you don't do, you're still damned when you're acting. So this, to me, is something that is very challenging, because you can't have 16 months being unable to appoint. In some instances, you have a situation where in 1 year you've got four acting CEOs that will come and go just like that, and it definitely dislodges and destabilizes the institution. COO, right on, brother.
Thank you, Madam Chair and honorable members, Chair of the SAM Support, my colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go through the SAMHSA presentation. It's not a very long presentation due to the fact that we've been requested to appear before this committee previously. But now that we've concluded the annual report, we thought we'd want to take the committee through it. And we're going to walk through the overview, the governance report, and our performance, and maybe just to deal with the strategic challenges and what we think should be mitigating actions. Jefferson, we have our mandate, and it has not changed. And the SAMHSA Act has three objectives. The first one is to ensure the safety of life and property at sea, to prevent and combat pollution of the marine environment by ships, as well as to promote the Republic's maritime interests. Now, we got to a stage where there was huge accidents occurring in the inland waters at some stage in the past. And there was a feeling that we should extend that mandate of ensuring safety into the inland waterways. And alongside with all the other updates as we get from time to time relating to the safety of life, search and rescue, etc. So our mandate has been moving along the lines of the prevention of loss of life. Now, our vision is the authority championing South Africa's global maritime ambition. And I think we've been here. Now, what we have as a value chain, and we've got our mandates, and we thought we'd just want to spend some time this time around to demonstrate how we understand our work. And the first part is we, in terms of the third objective, are charged with the development of the maritime sector. Now, we undertake activities in that regard to cause the maritime transport system to grow, transform, and support a sustainable development. And then there's one specific task we do. In terms of the Ship Registration Act, we are required to promote the ship register of the Republic. And then we act as an authority. And in that regard, we undertake activities to register those ships and register, authorize certain people that must do work, whether it is training institutions,
whether it is recognized organization who act as our extension, etc. And then once you've got that in place, we have a task of monitoring that compliance. So part of our work then is to employ surveyors that go board the ships to check if people adhere to the rules that govern the operation of the exact areas that they operate in. And then we do enforcement and manage compliance. We are a Schedule 3 entity of the department, and we are governed by the board, which reports to the ministry, and such is our structure. But maybe we thought we'd want to talk to the footprint. We are represented in the entire republic, and we've segmented the country into four regions. The northern region handles mainly the inland waters. We've got a great deal of inland waters, particularly in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, parts of Gauteng, and all of that, those inland water activities are regulated from Pretoria. And then we've got the three regions, the eastern region, the southern region, which extends from East London all the way to Cape Agulhas. And then we've got the western region, which extends from Cape Agulhas to Alexander Bay on the western seaboard. Now, in terms of the governance report, the chair just now was saying that we've got, it's a six-member board that is appointed by the minister, and then there's the CEO, who's an ex-officio, and as well as the representative for the shareholder. So that makes it an eight-member board. The chair has already said that for the board to be correct, you need all six members, or at least four of the six. We've now got the four, and he's spoken about that. And those are the demographics of the board. The year under review, we had everybody, the board was correct, but the subsequent developments are such that we've had retirements now, which gives the entity a problem, because if you can't get one for whatever reason, then it means the board cannot do its work. Now, if we get to our corporate performance, we achieved 65% of our predetermined objective indicators in terms of the audit. And I'll come back to what happened to the other 35%. And we have, through our operational activities, saved the lives of 150 people. Now, these are the people who send a mayday, whether they are on yachts. I remember during the Volvo Ocean Race, we had to go into a search and rescue operations, and there was a big incident involving the Robben Island ferry where we needed to intervene. And that would include even those medical evacuations for any ship passing the coastline. We have an obligation in terms of the IMO requirements that if there should be medical emergencies, we must send out a helicopter or a boat to go and evacuate those seafarers who are suffering, and that is the part of the world arrangement. So we've saved 150 lives in those incidents. And then how we do our work is on the ships that are registered in the country. That includes all the fishing vessels and all the small vessels, harbor craft, and the four of the large merchant vessels that we have on our register. We carry out what is termed as flag state control inspections. In terms of our international compliance, we are required, any country is required to ensure that its ships comply with international rules. And for a country to do that, it is required to carry out scheduled surveys, and that's what we do as our living. And then for all the other visiting ships that are not registered in our register, we are required to still inspect no less than 10% of those ships as they come. So in that regard then, we carry out what we call a port state inspection. Now, we carried out 13,300 survey activities to fulfill our obligations. We did not have any ship losses, did have some incidents, but we managed to manage the impact of those. So none of those ended up being any major ship losses. We achieved level 3 of our BBBE scorecard, and I spoke about the port state control inspections for all visiting ships, which we've done. We did have pollution incidents, but we managed to successfully manage all of those. Now, the importance about those pollution incidents, honorable members, is that sometimes a passing ship just pumps oil because it costs money to dispose of that oil. So our requirement, which I'm going to come to later, is that our surveillance systems should be able to allow us to catch those people as they do that. Now, there's a whole lot of technology that we employ. We do mirroring of the coastline, because an oil spill causes a sheen which reflects on the satellite. That allows us to go and say that's where the spillage is. So I think we've been managing that environment quite well. There was only 208 liters. That's not only, because that's still a big damage. But we carry very, very heavy fines if we find any transgressors there, up to R1 million, actually. Now, from the corporate performance, if we continue, we had 13,722 ships that visited our ports. Now, in terms of the ISPS code, which is a code on security, every ship visiting our ports must report within 96 hours or 96 hours before the actual arrival. So we clear those ships and work with Defense Intelligence, Home Affairs, and others in order to carry out that function. We do that with the first port of call on behalf of the Department of Transport. And from a search and rescue point of view, we maintain a database of approximately 6,500 beacons. Now, those beacons are what people activate when they get into trouble. So that is our search and rescue initiatives. And we still have the 4 merchant ships. We're hoping that that number would have grown, but it does look like it will grow before the end of this current financial year. Now, we have the National Cadet Ship Program, and that's what the chairman of the board was reporting about. It's been a resounding success, and we're beginning to see the growth of the skills in provinces that are far removed from the coastal provinces, which is our reach in terms of the maritime development. We have now, we were requested by Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries to recommission their ships, and we did so, and we continue to manage those vessels. And we now have an automated ship register. So, and that's another international requirement, both for ships and for seafarers that we have. Now, in the financial performance, we came from a very bad state of affairs the previous year, where we were showing a big deficit and losses. we managed to turn that situation around. We grew our revenue by 21%, from 328 million rand to 395 million rand. And we did have a tariff adjustment, albeit that it was implemented in September of the year under review. So we missed the full benefit of that. But what we also did, we really drove our expenses down. We do have commercial revenue from the training vessel that we run, the old Agalas, and that earned us 24 million rand. It does look that the year that we are in currently, it's pointing to another strong financial performance, because we've again had the tariffs adjusted. We only implemented those in December after speaking to our customers. That was again late, and it's something that we're dealing with. Ideally, it would be appropriate to implement those tariff increases at the beginning of the financial year. And that process requires for us to get the minister's approval and then the concurrence by the Treasury Ministry. We're working on fine-tuning that process such that it yields that result early enough in the year. I did speak about the reduction of 9% in expenditure, and that really was just the cost management that was instituted by the board. Now the cost containment measures have become a way of doing business, and we've seen operational efficiencies really beginning to improve. So if we give a summary on our performance, we've now got surpluses of 62 million rand as we closed the year. Now, when we consider the fact that we had to deal with a 35 million rand deficit, if you add the two, just in the one financial year, we've had an improvement of 97 million rand. And we thought, and it was a combination of all the bits and pieces, you know, the management of the costs, and really us beginning to refocus on certain areas in the business, and thanks to the leadership of the board. And incidentally, we had a board committee that assisted us to achieve this this turnaround. I did speak about the cash reserves and everything. We never used to speak about the cash reserves. Now, if we having said all of that, the chair reported that we had a qualified audit, and it did report that firstly we had a late audit, and even then the outcome was qualified. Now, the issues that led to the qualifications, it will not be on your pack, but that's on the board. We had irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure that we could not fully account for due to lapses in supply chain processes. We did do something about this one. In fact, our chief procurement officer then resigned on us. So when we were wanting to take corrective measures, the people that were responsible, at least the one person in this respect, had jumped the ship. Now, the supplier commitment list was not accurate, and we didn't have a process to monitor that. We have now upgraded our accounting system as of December 2017. So we hope that we have dealt with that problem. And the third reason that the revenue information from the ports It's not a completely accounted for. This was not a qualification matter. It was a matter for emphasis. Because we get our revenue collected by the National Ports Authority when the ships call into the port. Now, we depended previously, which we had agreed with the Auditor General, we depended on the audits for GNPA. So we placed reliance on that side, that if they were audited and there were no significant difficulties found, then we would take that outcome and account for it. The AG in this during this audit decided that we ought to have our own mechanisms and systems, which was never a requirement before. So we are putting measures in place to address that. Then, from a performance performance point of view, that other 65% that I was saying will explain the 35%. We have a system that monitors what happens in the coastline, our surveillance system. We are required to keep 95% uptime on those systems. Now, when the system was installed, it doesn't produce its own report. So what we do, like we do in shipping, we keep a logbook. When the system is down, we log entries and we report because it's supplied by a service provider. So we check between ourselves and the service provider. The AG felt that we ought to get a system-generated report, so they would not accept our measures. We accepted that, and we're going to have the same difficulties during this year because that upgrade is only starting to take place in February, and the year end is end of March. What we did, though, about that, we changed the actual indicator to say if we've got these difficulties, then maybe we need to restate our indicator in a manner that allows us to still keep the uptime and account for it. And we've got a process, because it must be approved by the minister, that whole change in the APP. And then we had difficulties with the internal audit function. And again, it was linked to the supply chain officer that left us. In fact, we had a big difficulty with this one. Now, the key strategic challenges and our mitigation actions. We still battle with maritime enforcement resources. For us to respond to incidents out there, we need the eyes, that's our surveillance systems. We need the mouth, the ability to communicate. That's our communication systems, still at the same place. And then we need the physical ability to intervene. That is our salvage tugs, etc. Now, it's a long-term project. We need about 2 billion rand, and we're working with the Department of Transport to procure that emergency tug. We're hoping that we'll get to that. So the tools of trade remain our biggest problem. I've spoken about the qualified audit and what we've done to prevent that occurrence going forward. The underfunding of sea watch and response, which houses search and rescue, we're battling. It costs us almost 100 million rand now to fund those operations. And that money comes from the Department of Transport. And I think this past financial year, they paid us just on 12 million rand. So we've got a big shortfall. What we have done there, there's the SAMHSA funding model that is an initiative by the department. And that funding model, then what we did, we put in everything that we require, the capacity, the equipment, etc. And that's going to give us a new tariff that we hope to go to market with. And we hope that we shall have solved the problem if we've done that. We have a big problem of diminishing technical skills capacity. Our workforce has aged. That is the reason we had started the National Cadetship Program, because how the value chain on skills work is that we go and the seafarers, they go out to sea, work, earn their money. And when they are retiring, when they want to come off, that's when we employ them. Because when they've served at the highest level on the ship, they know how ships behave. Then we train them as surveyors. Now that pipeline, until we build people going to sea, we're not going to get anybody coming back. So we've got a lag of about 5 to 6 years, but we're beginning to see that number increasing. For the first time, we are up to complement on surveyors, but we still employ a few 68, 70-year-olds because that is what gives us the complement. And we're seeing some youngsters starting to come back from that. And along with addressing the whole equity question, in fact, last year we reported that we had the first 3 female master mariners, all African. And we have another 2 coming out this year that we're going to leave them because we account for skills in the industry as well. So it's starting to move, Madam Chair, and we just need to give it its time. And then we've got the big problem around the ratification of legislation. But again, with the department and my DDGs here, they've put together a committee that comprises both SAMHSA and DOT staff. And we've put together a program. We just need to see that development of legislation through the processes, parliamentary and otherwise. And I spoke about the communication infrastructure. That is a problem. And how we've dealt with this, as I'm saying, is through the SAMHSA funding model. We're hoping that we shall have built enough funding so that we can go and procure some of this equipment that's beginning to fail on us. Now, the key strategic challenges and mitigation actions, I've been talking about this during the presentation, to ratify outdated legislation, which is a big thing because how we get evaluated as a country, it's how many instruments, international instruments, have we ratified, because that determines our level of compliance. But we've got a program to correct that. It's not many now. I think we're up to about 90%. But the 10% is still quite important for us. Now, there was the maritime transport policy that was passed last year. And we just need now a strategy to look at its implementation, and that's driven from the department's side. There was a board decision. When we took over the training ship Agalas, it was on SAMHSA's books, and the decision had said set up a special vehicle outside SAMHSA so as to manage the risk. And so that risk persists, and we are in the process of seeing how best to do that. The ship itself today has got beneficial work because we had a 3-year contract with the Indian government to take their scientists down to Antarctica. Now, what we do, when we get a charter, as a condition, we leave space for our training because it is when the ship is working, when we get training done. And when they charter, they pay for the ship. So it's not posing a problem to the SAMHSA expenses, but it's a problem that we need to deal with going forward. The comprehensive maritime transport policy at the end of the financial year had not been dealt with but has subsequently been passed. The only thing that remains is the finalization of the SAMHSA funding model, which was supposed to have been done by October, the end of October 2017, for us to start charging the new tariffs in the new financial year. So that is possibly the biggest risk that you're facing. Madam Chair, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, that was our very brief presentation, but we hope it covers everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much,
Acting
CEO. Honorable Member, here we are. Let me start at the extreme and Honorable Khadebe, Honorable Mpanza, Honorable Sibande, Honorable Humsinga, Honorable De Freitas, Honorable Nelichungu, Honorable Ramataka. Honorable Khadebe.
Thanks, Chair. Let's appreciate the presentation. But also make a reflection on this disappointment that we're expecting this annual report to have came last year, and it didn't come, which it really made our work difficult in order to complete the PRRR. Chairperson of the board, it's a great concern that your ship continue to sink, and it looks like this time it's a Titanic. It's going to sink with the captain, but the captain is hiding because he's not coming forth in order to assist us or to engage with us to say where are the challenges that we can be able to, you know, assist. Maybe to inform you, it has been a trend that SAMHSA provide targets that they don't reach all the time. And you once engage with them, don't put too many targets that you aren't going to achieve. And in their last presentation, they said, no, these 16 targets, at least they are sufficient for us to be able to achieve. But still, 5 targets are not being achieved. It really means there's a real serious problem in the entity. And I really want to know what happened to this particular issue. I'm also worried that some of the board members, their term is expired and you're going to find it difficult to operate, which gives us a green light that we must pressurize the minister to ensure that he finds replacement within short space of time. And definitely, Chairperson must engage with the minister to find replacement soon as possible. But the disappointing factor, Chair, is that SAMHSA has performed almost like PRASA with the acting CEOs for quite more than 3 years. What kind of an entity is that? Seriously, it's a challenge. Let me leave that and focus into matters of your presentation. You've got the 2 targets that they couldn't be able to reach under the service delivery. If you can be able to also give reasons, what are the reasons for those particular targets not to be reached? The one of the target is in relation to the port state inspections. That has not been achieved. Safety of the maritime. Can you be able to give us a reason in terms of that, what happened? Because the safety of the maritime is very, very important in terms of making sure that there's quite great performance. There's an issue in terms of irregular expenditure. That from your 214 million, you continue to increase in your irregular expenditure. This time around, it's 238 million. What caused that?
because last time when we engaged, you said, no, you'll find means and try to reduce that. But instead of reducing, you just increase. Maybe the CFO must be able also to explain to us that in terms of the treasury regulations, 16A 6.1, what are the causes of not compliance in terms of those regulations? I understand that there are, I think, about two these regular regulations that have been broken. The 500,000 that has been procured without quotation. The 500,000 that has been procured without competitive bid. If you can be able to also get an explanation in terms of that. Because it really, shows. But if you remember correctly, in your previous reports, this has happened quite some time. And we ask you what measures were taken, and you said no, there were stringent measures that were installed to strengthen the supply chain, but still there's a loophole. Specific people do those things without complying. And I really worry whether there's any disciplinary action that has been taken towards those particular individuals who have implemented these things without complying. The last question is that does SAMHSA have the internal audit unit? Because it really gives me some doubts that it really has. But if it has it been effective in implementing its authority and work within the systems? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just welcome Babu Uthabizolo and the team. Chair, mine will be very short. It's just two, as a general statement, I'm just picking up that there are quite a number of challenges with SAMHSA. And if maybe they can just specify those, maybe in writing, not today, where they expect the committee maybe to make interventions on, so that we'll be able to, when we meet with the minister, we can be able to articulate those specific areas where it's beyond their control. Because they've highlighted quite a number of issues. Chair, the other issue is that on the page 4, although it's not numbered, it talks about committees. Now, the issue of qualified audit is a worry. Of course, they can talk about the surplus and everything, but the challenge is that they have not achieved a clean audit. Here I see there are a lot of committees. There's an audit and risk committee. There's a risk management committee. My question is that what are these committees doing? Because they should be picking up, you know, those red flags. You don't have to rely on the internal audit committee only at a management level. But these are committees that are subcommittees of the board, and their responsibilities is to really pick up the risk areas and then come up with interventions to mitigate that. So it's not helpful to have a committee, but the committee is just a committee and it's not doing what it's supposed to be doing. Chair, the other one that I want to check, how is the management relationship with the HE's office? Because also it helps if there is teamwork. You don't operate in silos. and you interact with your colleagues, and if there are areas where they need to assist you, you raise those issues in advance. But it will also depend on the relationship between those two departments. Then the last one, Chair, how prevalent is the use of consultants when you are actually performing your responsibilities, and also in terms of service delivery, your service providers, how are they doing the work? Are you using a lot of consultants, or you're using the internal capacity? And do you have enough internal capacity? But I doubt that you have. I think you have covered that one. But then I didn't hear, when you don't have the internal capacity, what do you use also to supplement that? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Sibande.
Thank you, Chairperson. Nami, I'll try, it won't be long, but to hint there and there. Chairperson, I think my colleagues are issued that worry of late submitting. But in a sangin, I'm telling you, Chairperson, we're board. Chairperson, we're board. In a short summary, out of nine provinces, you indicated that Limpopo and KwaZulu-Natal, in terms of seafarers, Limpopo is leading. Of course, that can be an achievement. My worry is one. Sesithe lesikhathi, you are in power. And most of the time, most of us were the people who are talking about the radical transformation. Ibambe kuphi to other provinces as well? Where is the problem? And then, Chairperson, what worries me, when they were presenting the issue of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, not fully accounted for due to the lapse in supply chain processes, it meaning worries the Chairperson, because his comment, there was a person, I'm subject for correction, who resigned, and it's very difficult to follow that person. You see, my problem is this. Therefore, I doubt if SAMHSA does have a risk management. Because if there was a risk management, they were the ones who were supposed to pick up that there is a fire coming. Then also, it multiplied by the issue of vacancies which are filled by acting people. Because people will stay there with an intention that I'm acting, and then after, if there is a fire coming, I jump, you'll do nothing, and the money is gone. Since you have noticed that thing is happening, what mechanism do you have on the table in order to reduce those problems? Because as my earlier comrades indicated, or colleagues indicated about the issue of the period of some of the members of the board, which is due to elapse. That means we won't account. They won't account. Finish and last. And then also, Chairperson, another thing which is worrying me, it's in terms of inland water activities. You see, it mustn't be a paper just to say inland water activities. May I please elaborate? I'll put an example. In terms of pollution and water contamination, there was a time whereby there was a challenge in Carolina where people even revolt due to the underground water which polluted the dam which is used there. My question, therefore, do you have capacity in terms of inland water activities? Because if you don't have, it will continue. For an example, in the past there was some few reports about the issue of big companies who are polluting our waters, but Ishayola Pants, because it's a big company, Ishayola Pants, at the end, the finger is pointed in the ruling party, while there are individuals who are owning those particular companies, which are never, I mean, nothing is said. Because if that's the case, how many companies have you charged so far? And then also, Chairperson, the issue of registration. I'll start by the picture. The picture lay any further at the back, because it will reflect you as a cut and paste. It's not for the first time you give us this picture. Not for the first time. Because some people, they thought that we don't read books, we don't do what, they just give presentation. This is not for the first time about this picture. If I space his name, you reported with a lot of things. So you put the big picture as if you produce 1, 2, 3, while it's not. It's not for the first time. Therefore, Chairperson, I wanted to find out something that in terms of registration, I recall there was a time when we have done an oversight visit in one of your institutions around here in Western Cape in terms of the safety in the sea waters, where they've shown us a big board and which is clear about you are able to detect a boat as far as abroad, the way it's so professional. But now, may you please take us on board that how many boats so far have you found which are not registered? Because from that gadget, from that instrument which you are using here, it is measurable enough that it can assist to eliminate some of the people who are taking chances in our sea waters. Because even there it's nothing. And I wanted to find out something. Most of the time, Chairperson, if you ask about financial implication, they don't tell us about financial implication. Because if you wanted to rescue whatever, if there was a river which was, I mean, sea which we have been, if there is a leak with oil, whatever, there are financial implications. I'll put it there. Maybe if there is time, I'll come again. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable
Humsinga. Chair, I disagree with my colleague. I think it's a nice picture. Maybe we suggest the oversight to Antarctica. I would like to start on the more sort of general stuff and then move on to more financial specifics. On your page, which seems to be 11, it's printed within the text, the 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth bullet point where you say no reportable ship losses occurred. There is, however, a underlying concern about our capability and our capacity to really react to a major disaster. And we do respectfully applaud the statement in your second bullet point that in fact 150 lives were saved, which is remarkable. I'm talking of a major marine disaster. Do we have the capacity? And I also recognize on your page 15 the third bullet point where you say underfunding of Sea Watch and response operations since 2009. So what is the suggestion? What is the number and what is the capacity needed to get us to international required standards that we should have? I would expect such detail, given the opportunity that you have to address this portfolio committee. To just simply say that in general we've been underfunded on a particular area, or that's just shooting the flare. What is the capacity that we should have in terms of international standards? What is the current competency and what is the shortfall? This committee would appreciate such information. Then, as you rightfully mentioned, we did approve a number of maritime transport policies, and some of those alluded to ships that need to have insurance with regards to pollution and elements of that. Now, I would like to ask you for a framework, an implementation framework, as to where are we with this implementation. I do understand that there's a lot of liaison and cooperation needed between yourselves and DOT, but where are we with this? What are the different elements that we agreed to and which Parliament approved, and where are we in terms of the implementation and deadlines around that? Because if we say that we have approved and we therefore agree to comply to international standards and other agreements, certainly there's also an implication around that. So what is the implication? What is the framework? What is the deadline? Then we get to the financial side of things. And as what was mentioned by some of my other colleagues, on the one hand we have qualified audit opinion and also a statement by the AG that only 65% of the predetermined objectives were achieved. And on the other hand, we hear of performance bonuses and we hear of performance increases and all sorts of rewards to management, which I find a bit in disbalance, because surely there must be a balance between the two. So my question is, what is the criteria for performance bonuses and the awarding of performance and performance increases? And to what extent is there a alignment between the achievement of predetermined objectives and audit outcomes and the performance bonus criteria that you currently employ? If you could give us those details. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Humsinga. Honourable De Freitas.
Thanks, Chair. A lot of the questions have been covered before, so I won't repeat them. I did hear one of the speakers saying that they have submitted a name for CEO. And I kind of read between the lines of frustration that they weren't getting any response. Is it simply because the minister is just not responding, or is that the case? A lot of other colleagues chastised you, but I sense that it's not in your hands. So if you could just tell us about that. And then also tell us why the report was delayed, your annual report. What caused that? Sorry, I'm just looking at any other questions that haven't been asked. Something earlier was mentioned, but if you could just then unpack for us why you only achieved 65% of your objectives, and that's quite low if you compare it to the other entities. There seems to be a problem in this entity. I think that is it, Chair, and I think all the others have been covered. Thanks.
Honourable Ndoli Chung. If you can switch on your... The entity has got a lot of challenges. You know, they've mentioned wasteful expenditure, diminishing technical skills capacity, but they're not coming out with a clear roadmap as to how they are going to be addressing those challenges. And also the issue of the minister, not, you know, which has been raised, not responding to their challenges. But for me, I would advise that they go back, and they've got a lot of work to do, you know, to come here and give us exactly what they are going, their turnaround strategy. Thank you.
Honorable Ramachaka.
I'll also try and just be brief and avoid those that has already been asked. And quickly, on the slide 15, if I get straight to the slide 15, the question about the diminishing technical skills. What is the plan to deal with that? Is that a crisis, or is it a management lapses? The communication infrastructure problem that you're saying is absolute. What and you say it will expose the country there to risk, but it's not enough. What is it to be done addressing that particular question, given that the only authority that can avoid or be that is yourself. So you can't throw the hands in the air and just simply raise this and the risk. What is it that must be done to mitigate those kind of risks that you're talking about? Initially, when I was reading the document, I was wondering, why is it that the AG's audit findings not part of the presentation that we have received? And then and I wasn't sure what was the reason for, I don't know whether it's only mine, but most of that what we have here doesn't have that page. What was the reason? But maybe it's because of the challenges that we have. The problem of the legislation and delays and delays and delays from the department side. I've heard you talk about now you have a team or committee that's supposed to deal with this question. What is the problem? I remember the 2015, one of the things that we discussed with you was the amendment of the legislation in one of the oversights. And there was a suggestion as how you deal with this question, but now it's 2018. We're still talking about this today, but what is it that is actually a problem? You are the practitioners in the field. You have already identified the problem that we have in terms of gaps. And of course, the executive authority process those to become the amendment of the legislation. What is not clear is not exactly. Maybe this is a question that would also be best addressed by the Department of Transport. Exactly what is the problem? Because you haven't the delay from them, but you have submitted, I suppose you have submitted your comment in terms of the amendment. And I'm looking on my left, and I'm looking on my left from the department side to find out what is so difficult? What is it? At some point we were so agitated to an extent that we said, shouldn't we come up with a committee act or committee legislation if there is a failure from the department to suggest anything? Now it's 2018, must we ask the same question about it? Is it the department capacity, or is it not liking the amendment that must be done? But if they're going to be addressing the challenges of the country in terms of the maritime and the safety on the sea, I don't see why they should have a problem. So why is it this problem? So it's not explained. A quick one, Chair, the outstanding treaty, the 10%, we don't have anything that is on our table insofar as the domestication or making going to Parliament and putting those before Parliament. What's the problem? Where? What is it that we need to do in addressing that particular problem and challenge that we as a committee should? Are they sitting in the desk of the Deputy Minister, or are they sitting in the desk or in between the desk of the Deputy Minister and the Minister? It's not very clear what we need to do. So maybe, you know, I don't know whether the institutional arrangement that you have, and that Mavusoda, whether it works or not works. Because if your institutional arrangement and the interactive mechanism that you have with the department, you know, not with the department, that's very, with the minister, because actually that's where you account to. What other mechanism should be put in place? Maybe you understand better? I don't know, because I should suspect that there should be a discussion with the chair of the board at some point with the minister. The minister is supposed to be saying these are priorities, how are we going to be able to handle this? That's a process of a year, every year that has to happen. And there should be a mechanism of engaging. Does this mechanism exist or work? Or is it simply not availability of the mechanism? Because I think the institutional arrangement helped us to resolve the problem. But I don't know this, whether your institutional arrangement worked. And that the CEO, or maybe you're not going to say it loudly. But let me just finish here, Chair, on this. Expiry term happens of the board, two board members. It suggests on your document here that the term expired in 2014, the two of them, 2016. So 2017 in June. Okay. Now there's a process that you were talking about of utilization, that they are willing to be utilized. Every time you need them, you can at least call on them to do. I wasn't sure what the utilization you were talking about mean. Whether you utilize them as extension of the board or utilize them for what, I don't quite know, and I don't know what is permissible and what is not permissible. In terms of the act, I don't know. Maybe you will respond to that particular question. I will leave this chair because lots have been said about it. But my worry is this: this is now the issue about the CEO issue. It's 16 months has been mentioned. Now 16 months is more than a year. Just to make sure that we understand what you are talking about. And at least in terms of even the public service commissions, and everybody has been quite emphatic about 6 months period of filling of those critical vacancies, that this vacancy must be filled. If you're talking about the CEO, talking about the engine, person who must be answerable to the board and to the minister, in terms of the Company Act at least. That's how it operates. So for 16 months to happen, it may also mean that the position has already, that recommendations is no longer, in fact, regarded as a recommendation. It may have been lapsed in the process. It may suggest that at some point you'll be confronted with re-advertising the position, but difficulty is if it's lying in someone's desk and there is no feedback as to what is happening with it, the board is hamstrung, the board is unable to do anything in terms of whether it's re-advertising, headhunting, or anything. I think that's a matter that is of concern to me and, of course, to the committee as well. Now, I don't know, Chair, but I think this is a process that in the next committee, when the minister is invited to come, this is probably to address the committee on. I think the mechanism is just things not working. I mean, we can't simply just not say that. It's a matter of course. I mean, we have all the act that puts requirement and responsibility on every official that is employed. Like the group, the CEO, I don't know, when are you filling the position? He left you quickly? How far are we in terms of that position now to make sure that it happens? So for me, that's the kind of thing. But Chair, let me leave it because I know maybe there's a lunchtime that is coming. The turnaround strategy must be a little bit more detailed so that we can see what is going to happen when. If you, the next time around, I think that, Chair, it's useful to ask the SAMHSA to finish us with a turnaround plan. If it's already in existence, that we can at least have it so that we can keep you accountable based on that. The oversight is based on what you said you're going to do. And, of course, periodic coming in the interval, looking at whether you are implementing that or not. So if we could nicely ask, I know the chair asked earlier on, talked about 48 hours to the other committee. I'm not going to say specify the 48 hours. I'm going to ask nicely if you could be given this in the next 5 days, given at least the turnaround strategy. What is your turnaround plan? So that we are able to know as a committee where you're going to get when. That's all I want to say, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Like I said to the previous committee, if there are other matters that you believe needs elaborate explanation, you can respond to the committee in writing within 48 hours. Dade Mavuso and your team, I think already members are anticipating that we will have to call you again to come and deal with issues which actually we believe probably will be able to propel you to do what we expect of you to do in the portfolio. But also at the same time, we believe that you are strategically positioned. Moreover, the Operation Pagisa, as outlined, is mainly resident in you. Development of infrastructure, development of human resource, and many other things that we believe this noble idea will be able to assist us going forward. To me, I take it that that can only happen if you are given the necessary tools that you can be able to use. Tools as in additional members of the board, which actually their term of office has expired, getting proper people as in your functionaries in this whole situation. But also, I think it becomes important that when we get proper information, it could have been so nice that you really outline the challenges that the AG has indicated to yourself, that you are able to broaden the scope, particularly to members of the portfolio committee, on the financials, because part of the things that one is just like an eagle's eye when you look at the whole situation. You need to be empowered financially so that you can be able to do more, because you're doing the best with what you're having. But if you are given an opportunity to can be able to have extra financing and dealing with the legislations that are outstanding, it definitely will be able to help. And I concur with what one honorable member has said, that probably we need to engage yourself and say which are the laws which actually you believe we should be able to. We are legislators, of course. The laws that you believe are outstanding and are hampering your progress, bring them so that we can be able to, in committee, be able to deal with those if the department is really slowing down your progress. I'm taking it back to you, Mr. Mavuso, and your team.
Thank you very much for the questions, honorable members. Thanks, Chair. I'll really take the issues that relate to the appointment of the CEO and also of the board. I may request to comment as the COO also deals with other issues. The reason, to some extent, that we still don't have a CEO has been that on two occasions, when people who used to work for SAMHSA but had to go for a variety of disciplinary reasons or other reasons, somehow they were always aware that our submission was going to cabinet from the ministry. And they would, at the last moment, raise objections based on what is called, what's this nice word? Whistleblowing privileges, rights. It's something that must be retained. I think our country and constitution are great for having that. But we must also be aware that these things are subject to very serious abuse, very comprehensive abuse. If people know when the AG's report is going to be finished, and as soon as it is finished, hardly a day, they have issues that go to the media before we even see this as a board, it does mean there is a bit of a problem. Whether these things are true or not, there is a problem that we must face. All those things notwithstanding, though, regarding the appointment of the CEO, one would expect the authorities to take a view of these, the information they get, and decide that it's serious enough not to proceed with this thing, and maybe start the process afresh, or to go ahead having analyzed the validity and importance of the information they get. There would have to be a decision in time, not for 16 months, one way or the other. We're totally unable to, and not even interested in, pushing forward a particular candidate. But it is hurting, and hurting very much, that as we are involved, I think in one of the major restructurings of CETA, with, I think, what would be, should have been foreseen as predictable consequences, that this has derailed us, maybe because we're not communicating as much as we should with the minister. You can't demand access, you request it, and given or not. But people are very busy. I did have a meeting with the new minister, Masongani, once since his appointment. It's not for lack of requesting to have such a meeting. But I grant that he's in charge of a big portfolio that's got PRASA and lots of other troublesome things. So we do, I know that on two occasions, just at the time when the submission was expected to get to cabinet from the ministry, somebody would write a letter and say there's something wrong, there is a candidate who's involved in this, that and the other. We've investigated those things fully, submitted written reports on our findings, and decided as a board that we stand by our recommendation. So it would be rejected or accepted. I think there's been no action. That's why the postponement. But perhaps the doubt arises because of these complaints. Regarding the trouble within the organization, there's been a lot of movement. It's been very awkward for me to sit with a board and have to approve, you know, a turnaround being implemented by an acting CEO who obviously has an interest in the outcome of these things that are being turned around. But given the number of supernumeraries that were incumbent, you know, in our structure, we just had to act to remove superfluous people. And some of that had to be done by an acting CEO. It did bring about quite a number of challenges. But we had to soldier on, we had to do that. But these obstacles, these reports, financial, they're supposed to go to the auditor. Suddenly, when somebody is asked why the report is incomplete or not done, before long, somebody's out of the premises. They've gone. That has happened with some of the key operatives. It accounts for significantly for some of the delays and lapses. So these, I said before we came, you always plan these things, that we should really not be defensive and point to scapegoats. But it's quite clear that if we give a report, we must account fully for why we don't achieve what we have not achieved. And I think you must talk about some of these things and be contradicted if this is an exaggeration. But we do have those problems. The board people, what happens is that when your term has come up, you cease to be a board member quite naturally, but we have committees of the board to which we can appoint people we think are very useful. And so they come in, work as heads of or members of committees on risk or finance or audit. If they were not available, we would be in a worse crisis than we have now. So they are no longer board members, but they are committee members because it is permissible. That's what we are saying. But what it means is that every one of the board members has to be present at a meeting, otherwise we just fail to correct. And it's a very, you know, delicate balance of things, because people do get sick. One of our board members is really ill for most of the time. She pulls herself out and comes to meetings. I do not know really why these absolutely outstanding people have either not been renewed, and they're outstanding. And when we're doing the turnaround of this organization, which was festering, the committee should know, and I think do know, because of continuous abuse by a CEO who seemed to ride roughshod over the boards that came and crumbled, we had some very, very serious problems. We needed every time that these board members, these gentlemen it was, not many women, to be on hand to assist. And they have done an outstanding job as members of committees when they were no longer able to be board members. The many meetings that happened, I mentioned that, but perhaps I wasn't really emphatic about the significance of that, is that not once did they take money for attending meetings, because we've come to a meeting, and when you come to a meeting, you know, there are board fees and so on. Absolutely nothing. They've spent their waking hours during times when they needed to attend to these matters. The very least, if I might say, would be to implore them to continue. But of course, it's a decision that resides elsewhere, and we don't mind whatever decision is taken. It has to be taken to replace them with others if for any reason their continuation is not suitable. So that's as far as these matters concerned. We had for a very long time a person who was our CFO was not qualified to be a CFO. We inherited that person. No qualifications, not a South African, but it was convenient that this person stays. So we ejected this person. There is fantastic democracy in our country. We had to follow a process to do that. And eventually the person is out now. Not before a lot of damage had been done. So some of our poor performance has to do with the saboteur in the house, who in a democracy you cannot just elbow out. You've got to follow process. Process takes time, takes proof, and takes all those things that are not comfortable but essential. I don't want to give these as excuses, but some of these are real reasons we've had problems that are being that have been identified here. You know, a wise person never tangles with the AG. So we should be happy with the irony that at a time when we had an audit, forensic audit, which you may have, Chair, if you don't have already, that shows serious misgovernance over an extended period of time. And we came out with a clean audit. There is something that didn't happen right now. And there is a qualified audit. I cannot question them, because the truth is that those discrepancies did happen. What their impact was, you need to have it retold by yourself. I think you were saying too many things. The reason we got an audit was ABCD, and it had to do with what the organization could have done, not realizing that a certain supplier used the same number twice, and that supplier didn't even get the contract. They were not hired. And it is a reason for an audit. It is, and we're not questioning that. So we should be careful next time and make sure that the documents don't have duplicate numbers and so on. People have run when we've come in to ask questions. They have run. And as they run, they leave a trail of destruction. We have to deal with that. We have to account to you quite frankly and honestly about what was created by them, being in strategic positions and not doing what they were supposed to do, and avoid excuses where we have failed. And so, and it took a long time, by the way, talking about financing to get approval to raise tariffs. And these are things that need to be negotiated. Approval in December means you have lost about 9 months of the year when you could have done certain things. Issues about being the eyes and ears, as the colleagues were saying, you can only do that. I'm familiar with this technology provided by the Canadians. It costs how much? 24 million that must be put in there. You can only put the 24 million if you get it. And if you don't have it, you're subject then to those shortcomings where you can't guarantee that the ships that come in are spotted and spotted on time. But we must do better than what we have done, Chair, it's not without reason that we have run through some of the difficulties. Thank you. But I would expect if the members still have time that precisely but really specifically you deal with many of the issues that have been raised in really precise terms, starting with the audit.
Thank you, Mr. Mavuso. Let me just indicate to honorable members that the company secretary has just given me the forensic audit. We will discuss how to take the processes forward once we have finalized with the meeting, but I just received the document today. If you can continue.
Thanks, but could I ask my CFO to go in first?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The issue of the qualified audit report, and it's a matter that also my chairperson has also raised. It is indeed a fact that over the years, SAMHSA has received an unqualified audit report, I think in the past 8 years, and it only happened in the previous financial year, which is the 2016-17 financial year. And to take members through what led to that qualified audit opinion, essentially the major challenge or the major issue that the AG raised was around supply chain management processes, where if you look at the report, there are two issues which the AG has outlined as having led to them issuing a qualified audit report. The first issue is the issue of irregular expenditure, and the second issue is the issue of commitments, supplier commitments. I'll come back and talk a bit more on these two issues. But essentially, on the first issue of irregular expenditure, what the AG had picked up was that in terms of SAMHSA's own processes in identifying irregular expenditure, because what the Public Finance Management Act, the PFMA, states is that in order for the entity to be able to address the issue of irregular expenditure, the entity needs to have strong processes in place to almost do a self-critical assessment to say, these are the items which we regard as irregular expenditure. You have a complete list to say, these are the items of irregular expenditure. And then when the AG comes and says, this is what we've picked up on your side, or this is what you've picked up as an entity or as management, based on what you have picked up, then this is what the AG, you start to agree or disagree, and then the AG maybe says, there are actually more items that we have picked up in addition to what you have identified yourself. What happens at SAMHSA is that in terms of our own self or our own processes, there were lapses in those processes where certain items were not picked up by our own supply chain management processes. And when the AG came, and it's also the issue that our board chairperson has mentioned, where the AG came and picked up, for instance, a simple example, where there was a supplier or there was a request for a quotation which was sent out. And the responses that were sent back in response to that request for quotations was that the tax clearance certificates of the two suppliers, supposedly two suppliers, they actually had the same reference number, which led the AG to say there was a collusion by the same supplier submitting information as two separate entities. And based on that, we picked up that even though the contract was not awarded to either of the suppliers, but and I can, in a certain way, understand where the AG was coming from, where they're saying that in terms of your own processes, how much more of this could have happened without you picking it up? And the AG, by its very nature, they always look at a sample of transactions. If they pick up a major issue, then they say, this is the extrapolation that, in other words, we looked at the sample, this is what we picked up. If we extrapolate over the entire population, this is what we extrapolate as having been the issue. There were also issues when it comes to quotations, where the quotations of over 500,000 there were quotations where you find that some of them, there was no supporting, the supporting documentation was not properly filed in a place where all the supporting documentation could have been kept. So we had a process where there was a process, or supposedly there was a process where there would have been quotations which would have been supplied, and also response to those tenders. But the supporting documentation, they would only pick up from two suppliers. And the AG would say, but what happened to the other supplier? And there was not enough information that was available. What we have done now is that we've sat down and said that supply chain management processes, we now need to start strengthening it. And also, I think one of the members also raised the issue that during the previous presentation, it was raised that this is what is being done. But members will recall that this relates to the 2016-2017 financial year. And the chief financial officer whom we had looking after supply chain management, she resigned and left SAMHSA on the 31st of March 2017, which was the end of the financial year. And I'm not saying that one is abdicating oneself from that responsibility of having to have sound governance, but when there was a disciplinary process instituted against the chief financial officer, she decided to, the chief procurement officer, she decided to resign from SAMHSA. And also for linked to that also is also the issue of supplier commitments, where there was also not enough processes in place to also ensure that we have adequate processes around supply chain management, around commitments. What it means is that you would have orders, but those orders, some of them, they dated back as far as 2012, and they hadn't been closed. And now the question is, do you require the service? Is there a commitment that those services will be required or will be procured from those suppliers? And we found that, and I'm not trying to run away from the responsibility that SAMHSA needed to also have exercised more diligence, but we found that our own systems also were not agile enough to give us the information that we required. So that's why we had to do an upgrade of our supply of our system, which is the which is called the Great Plains system. And then the issue of consultants, I know it's something that also one of the board members raised. There has been an effort and also a conscious effort to ensure that we also try as much as possible to reduce the amount of time that we are, or the amount of money that we are spending on consultants. That also, if you look at the annual report, in the 2015-2016 financial year, which is the prior financial year, SAMHSA has spent 7.9 million on consultants. And in the previous financial year, the one that we are looking at in the annual report, that amount came down to 5.3 million. I think there is still a scope, and it's also part of our cost containment measures. There is still also a scope to reduce that amount further, because we don't want to end up running almost a parallel system where we pay staff salaries and yet we employ consultants to do those the work that is supposed, because at the end of the day, that duplication ends up where there's no identification of responsibility or isolation of responsibility, where somebody thinks that that work will be done by the consultant or that work will be done by the employees. And that also obviously talks to the issues of governance. So without maybe going further, but we'll obviously provide a written response. Those were the major issues that the AG had identified, which are also incorporated into the annual report.
Thanks. Thanks, Honorable Chair. Maybe just to add on what the board chairman was saying, maybe just to put this committee into the picture. When the turnaround started, this was in June of 2016. During that June, we paid salaries on the 15th of the month. On the 12th of that month, we had 36 rand in the bank. And our salary bill is 12 million rand, or at least at that time. So such was the situation when we started, when the board undertook this turnaround. maybe there's still some more to come back with. But for us to show a positive improvement of 97 million rand in 1 year, having started from that, in order for us to pay salaries on that month, we went to the bank and asked for a temporary overdraft just so that we could pay salaries. Such was the state of SAMHSA when we started with that work. Maybe it helps for us to put these things that clear. Now, could we have foreseen the problems that we ended up with regarding the audit? How management works is that you've got the executive. Now, one executive is in charge of the whole performance area. That is the area of strategy. That area puts together these indicators, ensures that the report comes back relating to these indicators, such that we report on those indicators every quarter and must follow through, and they become the leader during the audit, himself and the finance CFO, to deliver the annual report, which comprises the financial side and the performance side. Now, I was acting CEO during this process, and obviously during ExCo meetings, you check superficially if everything is still in place, and there was no indication that anything was amiss until almost the end of July, when we're supposed to produce the finances. The finances were produced fine, but the actual audit, the responses and everything, is what one would not have necessarily picked it up. Didn't go to any committee because the people that manage it did not give an indication, and this is people at the executive level. Now, when we pick this up, it is when the Auditor General was saying the outcome we're going to give you is a disclaimer. So we went to the official note, say, so fine, what is the basis of this disclaimer? Well, first reason is limitation of scope. We have not received the information that we needed. And what information is this? So put together the whole team to find out that some of the information actually had been given. So we didn't want to go back to that issue. We just corrected, gave information, pleaded with the minister that we're going to delay the audit for these reasons. The third issue, though, honorable members, is that on the day we got the management letter, because the audit manager insisted that I've come to the end of my audit period, I'm going to issue a disclaimer as a management letter. So he said, we're not accepting it and we're going to go fight in parliament, and that's the reason they backed off. But we got that report nonetheless. And I got it on one day. The next day, the same afternoon, we had a media inquiry from the City Press saying we are in possession of this report. Please confirm that you in fact are getting a disclaimer. So such is the difficulty that you came. Needless to say that that executive, the supply chain manager, who was the second part to the entire thing, and the executive for policy and regulatory, all of those people have had to leave SAMHSA. So that is where the organization is at. And my chairman here said, it is not for us to come and give excuses, but it is quite disheartening to have come through that situation and then end up with this report. To tone down a little bit, the questions that were raised, we are going to undertake to submit the response. But the value chain of skills I was explaining earlier during my presentation, we take a whole lot of cadets. The country must employ cadets because they get employed as seafarers. And upon them achieving their highest ticket, we recruit them and they become surveyors. Now, the country has not been producing these skills for a number of years, such that the older people that worked for Submarine and Unicorn are all post-retirement age, and those are the people who've depended on to continue our operations. IMO rules state that you cannot inspect a ship before you get a particular license. To use an analogy, ICAO, these people from Canada, they would say that you cannot drive, you cannot examine a Boeing pilot and pass him as a Boeing pilot if you yourself don't hold that certificate as a Boeing. So it works the same with shipping. Now, in an environment where you do not have the people to pass and train and do all those things to others, your system itself gets compromised somewhat. Now, to answer the question that was relating to port state controls, there is a specific rule that you cannot do a port state control inspection if you're not qualified in a particular way. Now, over and above holding the certificate of competence, you need to be trained, and that training takes place internationally twice a year. So every time we were doing this, we had surveyors that were employed, but they could not do port state control, because they had not yet been trained. And the next training they attended was in Japan after the financial year. So we missed that target. We now almost start to complement, and we're playing a big recovery on port state control in particular. However, the issue here is that the requirement is that your flex state inspections must always be up to date. And I wish to put to this committee that you would know if that was not happening, because fishing vessels are not allowed to leave the ports to go fishing if they don't have certification. So you would know if there was a problem, because then there would be a big riot by fishing vessel owners and all the other operators. So we've kept 100% of that record just to keep the economy going from that sense. The management relationship with Asia, I think the chair has dealt with that, and the CFO has dealt with the consultants. I must mention that 5% on 400 million rand is a very small percentage, because 10% is 40 million rand, so it's almost 2% that we use on consultants, and I think we're well within the limit there. Precisely because, firstly, the bulk of our work is highly specialized, so only us employ those skills anyways. So you're not going to get a consultant if you do not have that capacity yourself. The CFO has dealt with the irregular and wasteful expenditure. Now, the question on inland provinces, the report, Honorable Sbande, was that we are doing work on inland provinces. And just to demonstrate that fact was that Limpopo is far outstripping everybody else. Eastern Cape, for instance, is the third. We've got seafarers from Free State and Mpumalanga in particular. Northern Cape, we've got a lot of fishermen there. So it is not that there is nothing happening in other provinces. And then the issue with pollution. SAMHSA, we are concerned with the safety of those people that use the waters. Obviously, by implication, the quality of water. But Department of Water Affairs deals with issues of quality of water. And Department of Environmental Affairs deals with issues of pollution. So we've got a governance mechanism where we all sit in one place. But our concern is, do those people incur any injuries when they are sitting, when they are using those waters? We will take the issue forward, but there's very little we can do from a legislation point of view about those big companies that pump effluent into the water. Then my chair dealt with the issue of our surveillance. Cost us, used to cost us 24 million rand, it's gone up now. We've kept that service going, so that's why we're able to see what's happening on our coastline. And that's the reason we took the portfolio committee the last time up that way, just to demonstrate the work that we do. The problem is not in the surveillance per se. The problem is in the communication as well as in the intervention, should there be a problem and they need to intervene. Just to demonstrate how that works, during the time where there were Chinese fishing vessels that we arrested last year, we used the very same systems to pick that up. And because we operate those DAF ships, we were able to go there. And listed the Navy, couldn't get all the capacity we needed from the Navy to intervene with those fishing vessels that were fishing illegally in South African waters. So there is something that is there. It's inadequate from a country perspective, but we do have what we need in terms of surveillance, not in terms of reaction, at least physical reaction. The reportable ship losses, there is a concern on how we would react to a major disaster. That is true. But we've done our risk assessment on what could be major. That is the reason we keep that emergency towing vessel. Because how a disaster unfolds, it first becomes an incident. A ship is parked where it should not be parked. That's when we intervene. And if you allow that to deteriorate, then it becomes a fully-fledged incident. So we've placed a lot of money and effort in the prevention and surveillance, as it were. And we do simulate from time to time. But it's an exercise that we do every 3-4 years. So we're going to do that, not this coming year, but in the next financial year. The bulk of the issues, we're hoping that to respond to the question around capacity will be solved by the funding model. I think the remainder of the parts, we'll just respond in writing. But I needed to demonstrate just how deep the problem at SAMHSA was when we started, so that we give a clear view on where we are. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I can see from the committee that the team is actually trying to be very polite, we are duty bound as SAMHSA to come out with answers and responses to everything that the committee knows, especially the negative newspaper reporting that were happening last year. The most important one for me and the thorny one was the one that appeared in the papers with regard to the actions that the former CEO took with regard to the bunkering business in PE, wherein it was discovered that he solicited, and a few weeks after he has resigned from SAMHSA, it was discovered and reported that he became the shareholder and a director of a BE company that was doing business, bunkering business in PE. And it was also discovered that the head of legal by then at SAMHSA, who was drafting the MOUs and all the agreements and granting licenses, was also a director sitting on the board of the PE partner in PE. The board was very vigorous, fairly so, and dealt with those issues. And the head of legal is no longer an employee of SAMHSA. Going back to the issue that the chairperson indicated on the board composition, when I look at what other state-owned entities pay their board members, and I look at what our shareholder pay our board members, SAMHSA board members, I always tell them in induction that they don't get paid. They deliver a service, and that's the community service for them. And I'm humbled that they're still doing it. They actually don't get paid, and we flag this thing to the shareholder to say, you are trying your best to attract this caliber of people who have to come and turn around the entity. Please try to compensate them fairly. And the maritime industry is very specialized, and SAMHSA Act is very specific on the qualifications and the criteria that you have to meet before you become a board member. And those members are still there and take time off from the activities that pays bills for them, and they come and serve SAMHSA, and they do it so diligently. And for that, I'm humbled. And the important thing, the SAMHSA Act says one is eligible for reappointment, meaning you can only serve for two terms. My experience has taught me that in the first year or two, you are still inducting these people to fully understand the maritime sector, especially those who don't come from the industry. And they become efficient and effective in the third year, which is the last year of their term. So I always plead with the shareholder to say, please retain them and keep them for the next term. And you still have that benefit of institutional memory. And that's why the board, in their own wisdom, decided, you know, to keep them and let them serve in committees for that institutional memory and the diligent service that they have done to the entity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, I'm just about to leave for another engagement. Honorable Ramatlakana will remain dealing with the issues.
Just to check all the questions, if you have, then we can say so, and if you still want to have a go, I can see it's a few minutes to two, so I'm just checking with you. Can I just get indication that, you know,
unless the honorable members want it otherwise, there are questions that we've been asked to respond to in a given time frame in writing. Those are outstanding, and we will be providing the answers as requested. But if the members feel that what's been given in response to the questions is not adequate, we'd be happy to deal with that.
Speaking on their behalf, I think that so far we would say for this round of engagement, we had, in fact, sufficient information. You also have received or now know some of the concern that we have. You also know what is it that we require from you, what we ask you for another turnaround strategy, which, of course, we'll have to engage with you on it. So once that has been submitted, we will check how the program looks like for another round of engagement with you, because I think we will have to talk about it face-to-face with you on that issue. And of course, we will hear then that the committee, the internal committee, audit committee is now functioning, is doing its work. We'll get all that update when we meet you next time around. Am I fairly reflecting your views?
Yes.
Okay. So your last parting shot, Chair, if there is any, I will allow you to for that.
It's to thank the honorable members for their time and also to apologize again that it's the first time that one has been able to engage. I hope it doesn't happen again. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I think the apology has been noted, and we were very worried that it did not happen at the time when we were asking and expecting, but at least explanation has been given. It's a communication issue that obviously we have to work with. I think that for that, Chair and the COO and the legal or the company secretary, good luck. It is still going to be a bumpy road. It's not going to be easy. We will see you soon, and of course we're hoping that this year we can have a go back to the clean audit. And of course we will engage with the other forensic issues that we'll talk about. So that's a committee that will deal with that. But you are released. Thank you very much.
Can I ask you, please, with all respect to leave the meeting? We are continuing. Our meeting is continuing as a committee. So you are delaying us.
Members, can we continue, please? In the absence of chairperson, we are allowed to elect an acting chairperson members, as you know the procedures. If the committee is going to continue with decision making, I'm going to we just wait for Mr. Khadebe to return to the meeting so that the meeting can correct. As you know, members, the election is going to be by a show of hands. I'm going to ask for someone to be nominated. If there's only one member nominated, that member will be the acting chairperson for the meeting. If there's more than one nomination, we'll go to a vote by a show of hands. Can I ask for a nomination, please? Mr. Harede?
Yeah, well, this woman empowerment, it's just that Honorable Ramatlakane is, you know, is in the middle of women. In actual sense, I was going to choose a woman, but I'll choose Honorable Ramatlakane.
Is there a conduit for this nomination? Ma'am, I acknowledge you.
Okay, honourable members, I think that, thank you very much. I think we're going to be snappy, we're going to be quick. All what we need to do, you would know that we had a plan for the whole day discussion because Prasa was supposed to be here and Prasa didn't come. So what we have, I'm sure you have received now a draft program. maybe we should just consider that, talk about that so that it can be amended, so that tomorrow when we meet, there will be now a better plan or program rather. Now, before we get into that, the chair has just whispered before she left the meeting of the various requests that is not reflecting on the program. The first one, which is a fairly urgent request, is requested as an oral submission to the portfolio committee by Zaki Ahmad. Zaki Ahmad has requested that the matter that he wants to deal with it is a commuter safety in the Western Cape. So we need to comment on that as to whether we as a committee accept that on rail. We need to comment on that, and then it can then be programmed as to when we will have him here for that oral submission that he wants to do. Number two, the next request, I just want to give you all the requests so that we can talk about them one by one. The second request is a request from the Dr. Bengu from the RAF, the chairperson of the committee wants to speak to us. He's urgently wanting a meeting before end of before mid February. Some to be urgent matter. The third issue is the Northwest Transport Holding. You know, the transport and holding, the issue that we talked about in the BRT. Remember, there was a discussion about a company holding as a holding company towards the formation of. That's a matter that there is a forensic audit that has been done, and there is a threat that that company will be shut very soon as a result of some of the problems. And then the fourth one is what we've just heard from SAMHSA, that they have given the chair a copy of the forensic audit. We'd need to factor all this in the program in order to be able to deal with it, because I think forensic audit report will also have to look at how we handle it, how we deal with it as a committee. So those are the four issues that are not necessarily captured in a draft program, which we must now give indication as to whether we agree with all these issues. Then we will ask Valerie to take this program and start factoring all these issues in the program so that we can deal with them when we adopt the program. I've seen Honorable Khadebe and then Honorable Singh at this side.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if probably didn't hear you enlightening this issue around BRASA, which I think it's very much important that we must engage in. Of the recent two terrible accidents that took many lives, that I think it's very much important that we must summon BRASA and RSR to come and explain what transpired and how far are they with their investigation and reports, so that at least we can be able, because if we don't attend to it while we still early, we'll find commuters thinking that the portfolio committee doesn't care about them. So I think it's very much important that we must summon those two entities, including the minister, as soon as possible. My proposal was that next week, in actual sense, it's the week that we must be able to summon, so that they became able to come and explain to us. Because as far as we understand, with the challenges that they have, with the instability that is also happening in those two entities, we really need an explanation. Otherwise, there'll be another accident that's going to happen, and you know, we are seen as people who are ignorant towards this matter. Thanks.
Maybe Honorable Sbu, just modify your proposal. Remember, in all the engagement with PRASA, we have asked, we wanted to talk about the rail, the current rail as a metro rail. What are they doing to make sure that the metro rail continues to run? In two occasions, we ran out of time. We didn't get to talk to them about that. But we now put them on the agenda and we put them early, including the Western Cape is part of that. What is happening in the Western Cape, central line not operational, all those things, they must come and talk to us about that. So we broaden the topic. We include including those accidents that they have to come and explain to us. But we deal with the metro rail shrinking, its capacity shrinking, and the safety of it. So we then have a bigger agenda on that particular item.
Thank you, Chair. I want to support my colleague and also what you suggested, Chair. And I think in spite of the fact that we've got somebody that approached the committee for a presentation, we should take action very soon. I would propose that we schedule this commuter and asset safety topic for as soon as possible. I would say if it can be next week.
Yeah.
It's really important, and I think the general public needs to see that the committee takes initiative and requests this before we get any presentations. Then I also have two other suggestions, if I may add it here, Chair. Then there's also a general, the crisis in leadership with PRASA is also very important, just as an item suggestion. My second one was the PRASA rail safety with railway safety regulator, which is the assets component and security of that, but also importantly the security guarding of commuters. Then in particular the central line, as you suggested, because there are some very good initiatives that I've got to know of, which will be employed there, but it's important that we look at safety in general for all commuters over the whole country. So even under that good suggestion and plan, there is a concern that it would be isolated, whereas commuters are affected in more places than just the Western Cape. The third one is, you might recall the session that we had around the investigations into PRASA and the very constructive proposals that came from there, in that we suggested to also invite Treasury and Hawks and then PRASA officials that can enlighten us on where the investigations are with Werksmans, etc. Because it was not clear from that session what exactly has been handed to the Hawks, what has been handed for internal investigation, and what has been handled under Treasury. Then, Chair, the next item is the BRT session that we had with the 13 cities, each giving us an indication of how far they are with their BRT projects. That is also, in a way, still hanging in the air. And we got some very useful information, and I would then also request the committee's consideration for a follow-up on the way forward, because as such, in the committee itself, we hadn't had the opportunity to engage in an analytical way with all the information that we got. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I don't differ with my colleagues, but I'm a little bit scared, you know. Number one, when I was looking at the program, which the proposed one, which is in front of us, talks about amendment bills, about bills. My concern is time frames.
are we not going to affect the time frames? I'm just asking in terms of self-introspection. Because bills, if we talk about bills, we talk about priorities then. If there is an implication in terms of time frames. Then secondly, I wish to request now, before maybe we come with the final bills, I mean a final draft, that my colleagues must be ready to work an extra miles in terms of, for us, in terms of enabling us to fulfill what they are proposing now, because we add a lot of items and there is no item which is not important. Everything is important to us. But I was just sensitizing the colleagues that extra time, we must expect that we'll work for extra time, because as the time goes on, there are things which might transpire as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for those and the questions. Well, I think in terms of the question as to whether Honorable Sbande's question, whether we're not putting too much on our agenda, we, as you know, it's our program. We can always adjust it as we go along in terms of... But if you look at tomorrow in terms of this program, we are dealing with the act of it. We're starting the deliberation. There's a the department's briefing. There's a state law advisors. So tomorrow already we're starting with the act. So it's not going to injure anything if we were to slot it into a program systematically. So I think, but we will obviously evaluate the program from time to time. On this one, Honorable Homsinger, you can actually deal with your item under that heading Brussels briefing, because the Brussels briefing is going to be holistic. It can deal with the issue about security. It can deal with the issue about leadership is there. It can deal with the issues about how far with the Bergsmann is just slightly a decision that we took as a committee. A fair follow-up on the issues that we need to program. I think we need to put that on the program, the discussion that we had then. And number two, the BRT, remember we were taking away, there was a decision and proposal on the BRT follow-ups. There was a follow-up that we needed to go to, I think it's the Free State and the Northwest. There was a suggestion that the Northwest, 2.8 billion expenditure, they need to come back, come and explain, because the time when we had a discussion there was no clarity. So the follow-ups that you're talking about, I think we should pull them out and put them into a program so that we are dealing with them as a programmatic type of arrangement. So then, Sbu, I'll come to you. Now the rail safety and that, now the question that we need to answer is to whether the next week's meeting of BRASA that we are calling for this briefing is going to deal with some security issues, whether we're going to separate that between the meeting that is requested by Zahi Asmat, or we're going to merge the two to have that meeting in one. We need to decide what we need to do with that. Because I don't know how much time that Zahi Asmat wants, because we can plan it to have him first, if we want to have him first, and either he will get done with this oral presentation before we go into the second item. The second item may well be PRASA's feedback around number of... PRASA will have the benefit of listening also to commuter organizations' concern around the issues of safety. In that, with their response to those questions, they will be able to... in fact, accommodate or help the community organization to understand what they are doing or what they are grappling with. So I would see that as we can allow it to happen in the form of let's give Zaki Ahmad, he's very urgently asking for this meeting. Program him, he comes and he presents,
and then the department comes and, of course, to PRASA in particular, deal with all the other issues, the leadership issue, the security issues, all the issues that we want, metro rail failure, central line not moving, what is happening going forward. I think that would be better dealt with that way. Yes.
If I may add, next week is still committee week until next week Tuesday. Members must remember it, next Thursday is the State of the Nation address. But Tuesday the committee can meet the whole day. We are not limited by time, so it might be a good day to meet and to utilize that time.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. I agree. I concur. We can meet tomorrow. They must make sure that they organize more water. We can meet until 8 o'clock next week, Tuesday. There's no problem. I think we'll be fit to work until 8 o'clock next week, Tuesday, Chair, if things are being, programmed properly. But the other Chair that I wanted to also to engage, you must remember, Chair, in the issue of the PRTs, we said the first thing that they must do, must go and do oversight first before we call them and engage with them. So let us not clash all those things, issues, so that we don't find challenges. But the other thing, Chair, that I don't see in the program, we said they must do the study tour or an oversight visit to Brazil. I want to see it in this program. Without this program, I'm not going to approve. I'm going to reject this. And I know EU is going to support me when we reject this program.
Can we get back to the program? Can we put the RAF on the 13? Ralph, Dr. Bengu's request. Can you put it there? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Honorable Svande, 13th of Tuesday. Honorable Svande. Sorry. Just Honorable Mbando.
Yeah, no, Chair. I'm happy with all the amendments and additions to the program. And I also commit myself in working around the clock as all members are actually emphasizing that. And I think we have just discussed that even last year. So we are in that mood. But Chair, I just want to forward my apology in advance for tomorrow and Thursday. Because, Chair, I have to go and see the doctor, and it's a follow-up checkup, and it's in Johannesburg. So it's something that happened yesterday, last year, and then the date was fixed. So there's nothing I can be able to change that one. But starting next week, then I will be, because I didn't see the program. Should I have seen the program in advance, then I was going maybe to suggest something otherwise. So I would just to ask the committee just to understand that predicament that I have. But come next week, going forward, then I will be available, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Banza. What remains suspect, though, is this confidence in which you speak about next week, that next week you will be available, as if you know what the doctor will tell you. That's faith, eh? Okay, can we ask that the secretary, committee secretary, work on this program so that tomorrow when we meet we can see. I think we take into account Honorable Hadeve's comment in terms of the study tour. There was an agreement last year that the date will be set and there will just be administrative issues. But then maybe tomorrow we can also just get an update on that. And but it must be factored into a program so that we can work towards it. If it's not in a program, it doesn't exist. Can we agree on that?
Agree.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that's all, honourable members, that we needed to just concretize and then leave after that. I will then call this meeting to an end. Good news, honourable Khadebe. The very good news you'll be happy to hear is that there's a generosity of the secretary here that they prepare lunch for us in the old assembly. Yeah, dining hall. Yeah, we can have a...
I'm not ready to share.